Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back, CJ Evolution, episode 66. I am so excited about the next guest we have on right now. Dave Sanderson is an amazing guest. He's an inspirational survival speaker and author. And he was on Flight 1549 that sparked the miracle on the Hudson, and I am so excited to have him on the podcast. David, are you there, sir?
I am. Thank you very much for having me tonight.
Well, we are very excited to have you on this podcast, sir. I know you're a very, very busy man, and you were on that famous flight. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and what you did before those changing moments on
Most
Flight
definitely.
1549?
Most definitely. For the 30 years plus before the miracle on the Hudson, I was in sales and a sales manager for a few different companies, but the most recent one was a company by the name of Oracle. I was in charge of the consumer packaged goods in the Southeast, and I traveled frequently, and I was responsible for the sales and sales management of that area for a specific product set. So that's what I did.
So you worked for Larry Ellison, right?
I did work for Mr. Ellison. That is correct.
That is amazing. So now I know you get this all the time, David, but can you tell us about the day of that accident and what was going on? What were you doing on the plane? Were you on business trip, I'm assuming, or what?
End of a 3-day business trip. Nothing extraordinary about the day. It was 11 degrees that day and snowing, but nothing unusual for New York City in the middle of the winter. And we started our day early because we were working inside of a distribution center that day. And if you've never, ever been in a distribution center, and I was in them quite often, they opened up early in the morning, and this one opened up at 2 o'clock in the morning. So we decided to start our day about 5, and got done about 10. So I had a 5 o'clock flight scheduled because I usually try to fly the last flight out. Just so you have plenty of time to do what you needed to do. But since we got done early that day, I called the travel agent, worked with her, and she put me on flight 1549. So I truly believe I was supposed to be on that plane for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tom Hanks portrayed Captain Sullenberger in the movie Sully. And was that an accurate description, what happened that day?
It was. It was, I've seen the movie 3 times, and I think it's fairly representative. There's a couple things I'm sure that they took some liberties with, but what I saw from the accuracy of that day, they were pretty spot on.
So can you describe, I know you've talked about this before, but what happened, can you describe what happened to the listeners? Why did that plane go down?
Well, nothing extraordinary. I didn't pay attention like everybody else doesn't pay attention on a plane when they make the announcements. But about 60 to 70 seconds after we took off is when I heard an explosion, and nobody on the plane except the captain and first officer, Jeff Skiles, knew at that point in time what happened. And we had a burst strike. And what was so unique about this incident was, normally if there's a burst strike, it hits an engine and that's it. Mm-hmm. Well, this would hit both engines simultaneously. So everybody heard just one explosion. So everybody thought, okay, it happened to the other side of the plane. Well, no big deal. Like I thought, this startled me. We'll go back to LaGuardia, get on another plane, and go home because you have another engine. But when it hit simultaneously, one parts of the miracle was one explosion, no one panicked. And I think that was one of the really interesting details about what happened inside that plane.
That's amazing because, I've been on planes before too, and I'm sure you have, Dave, where, you hit a bump or you hit some turbulence and people kind of freak out and everybody's kind of, but everybody was calm is what you're saying, correct?
Yep. Yep. No one lost it. I think at that point in time, no one really put two and two together that it happened on both sides of the plane because you heard one sound.
So the plane hits the Hudson, hits the water. Can you describe what happened then? So what was going on?
It was a hard hit, and I went back in my seat and back up in my seat. So I was like, it was a really hard reaction. When I came back up, I looked out the window and I saw light coming through the window. So, I knew I was alive, but I wasn't out. Because if you saw the plane landed, the bottom of the plane was stripped down. And someone didn't listen to the flight crew, went to that closest exit, which may be behind you, and tried to open up that door. So water started coming in immediately from underneath in the back of the plane. So that was the big part of what happened. Captain Sullenberger got everybody down, but getting out of the plane, because water was anywhere from ankle to waist deep immediately.
Mm-hmm. And you were on the last. You were the last person on the plane. You were in the back of the plane.
I was in seat 15A, and I was the last passenger off, and that was not by design. My my game plan was get to the aisle, get up, and get out.
Sure.
But when I got to the aisle, my mom, who had passed away in 1997, I heard her talk to me in my head, something she'd tell us when we were kids, and if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And I knew I was alive, but candidly, I didn't know anybody behind me, you know, was needed any help. So I went towards the back of the plane to see if anybody did need help. And there was a couple people who needed a little help just to get moving. You know, but everybody was moving pretty quickly, so we got everybody out, and I started making my way out of the plane. And, you know, I tell people, you know, what's interesting is, you know, you think you just get out of the plane, but the bins have broken open because of the impact, and the luggage has flown out. You're waist deep in the water. It's 36-degree water, and every time you took a step, you ran into something, you hit something. So
sure.
At that point, you couldn't see what you were hitting, but all the further I could get up was 10F, and when I got there, it was my turn to get out, but I looked out, and there was no room on the wing for me or no room on the boat for me. And that's why I was stayed in the plane waist deep in 36-degree water for about 7 minutes.
Gee. So, you know, I think you're like most people, Dave. I mean, your first instinct is self-preservation, right?
Right.
And so your decision to stay is, you know, your belief, obviously, and your mom kind of coming to you and saying, hey, Dave, you know, you need to do the right thing and stay, correct?
Well, I tell people, one of the great things about my mom is she never told me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
She would give you the choice.
Sure.
You know, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. So the choice was mine. I could have bolted, but my value set, and I tell people, you know, like you, probably you played sports and athletics, and you know, I was in Boy Scouts, so I was always around a group of guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was always with the teams, and I don't know about you, but when I grew up, you always took care of your teammates.
Sure.
You know, you had everybody's back, right? So you didn't pick on anybody, because you pick on one, you pick on all. So that's why, you know, I said, we're all one big team then. Mm-hmm. Everybody was having issues. So, you know, if anybody needed help, I just was going to be there. And fortunately for me, we got everybody out. And, you know, and there's only one elderly lady that needed some help, but she needed some pushing. And that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just have to, but that's what happened.
Now, I know Sullenberger, doing some research, and I know you know this, Dave. I mean, he kind of suffered a lot from PTSD, correct? Afterwards. I mean, he was kind of. He was kind of having second doubts, correct, about what he did and the actions that day.
Yeah, you know, I think we all knew something was going on, but until the movie came out, I don't think anybody knew the exact extent. But we all knew something was going on because many of my fellow passengers had that going on likewise.
Sure. And did you have any of the effects of PTSD after this? I mean,
you know, it was that you know, and I tell folks that you know. I didn't, and I kept asking myself, well, why didn't I?
Because
people kept telling me, Patrick, that, you know, hey, you're going to have depression, you're going to need therapy, but I didn't. And I kept asking myself, what's the difference between me and them? I mean, why are they having these issues and I'm not? And that's when I started putting the pieces of the puzzle together on how I could help other people who've been through a traumatic life event like I have and grow from instead of going to a depressed state.
Yeah, because you experienced growth, like you said, because I've been through a lot of, you know, critical incidents where, and I think I'm a lot like you, Dave, where it, you know, it happens and it's critical and it's traumatic when you're going through it, but I've grown through my experience that I've been through. So, I mean, how did that happen? Was it just your upbringing or what?
I think it was the training and I think, you know, I think it's definitely mindset. I think it was training. You know, I was head of security for Tony Robbins for 10 years prior to that day. I have 5 years assistant and 5 years head of security. So being around somebody like that, in addition to all the people he was hanging with. So I was around a lot of people who walk their talk, and say it that way.
Sure.
And I learned and absorbed everything that he taught and other people taught. So I had it inside, I think. But, I knew some of the strategies on how to really manage my state. And how if you apply a different meaning to something, you'll get a different – you'll put yourself in a different, you know, emotional situation. So, you know, I talk to, especially right now, a lot of sheriffs and police who are going through a lot of stuff right now who are questioning themselves. Like, you know, why is this going on? And when I get the chance to talk to them, I just sort of relate to how I did it and hopefully help them a little bit.
So what other specific skills in training did you have, you know, working with Tony Robbins? I mean, I know you had your experience in corporate America. What other things did you learn to help you through this?
Yeah, there's a number of different things. Number one, well, I think a lot of things from my upbringing in Boy Scouts helped me with the sort of mindset and physical aspects, like swimming and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the mindset-wise and growing from it was things like state management, how you can change your state in an instant, in a heartbeat, and being able to do that to myself instead of having someone else do it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the power of meaning and then using a tool which is known as reframing, in which I used and I still use today, is reframing the situation to where I can put a different meaning to it.
Mm-hmm.
Also using other people's references, and I use that a lot. Yeah, I use that a lot. Where and the pilots use this all the time. And they call it mental modeling. In their vernacular, it's called mental modeling, and basically using something from the past that you can model quickly to apply to a situation to be able to get a positive outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I use referencing. So those three skill sets is what I really learned. There's other things too, like sensory acuity, being able to communicate in different modalities and within myself or to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of skill sets like that I learned. And I just happened to have applied when I needed to apply it to grow from the situation.
That's amazing. And I'm such a huge fan, as are you, of Tony Robbins. I recently watched I'm Not Your Guru. I'm sure you've seen that on Netflix, and it's amazing. Now, talk a little bit about, obviously first responders were there that day. I mean, what was your interaction with the first responders?
They're the real heroes. And whoever said that, I give them 100% of the credit, and they were right. The first responders should get a majority of the credit, starting from the New York waterways, the ferries, to the police and fire on both New York and New Jersey side, the EMTs, the hospital workers. They stepped up, and that's what I tell people about the police and fire in New York people.
Mm-hmm.
I said, unfortunately, they've had to respond to things before, so they don't sit around and wait for someone to tell them to go do this. They just go, and then they start figuring things out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's one of the great lessons I tell people is, when you're faced with something like this, or a train incident or whatever it is, go, and then you start figuring things out as you start developing the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these guys did tremendously well, from the ferry captain Vince all the way through to, and I know all of the fire guys and the EMT guys from the New Jersey side and the police.
Yeah,
they did a tremendous job.
Now, how did leadership play into the final outcome of the Miracle on the Hudson, David? And how does it relate to entrepreneurs, people who are going to listen to this?
Yeah, I think that, I talk about how I think leadership was probably the key aspect of how this thing turned out. And I'll tell you the reason why. I'll give you a for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this until I was on Good Morning America, and I found out I was the last passenger off. And they showed me this picture, and I still carry it, and I show it when I speak. And if you've seen the movie, you'll understand what I'm talking about visually. Where on the right side of the plane, there was no crew. All the crew went out the left side of the plane. So the right side of the plane had to be managed by passengers who had zero training,
mm-hmm.
zero skill sets, but had to step up and lead that moment. And one of the things that I've learned, and from your past, but Tony teaches likewise, is the person with the most certainty in uncertain times becomes the leader. And it doesn't matter who that person is. It might be the lowly private, a sergeant. It could be a general, but whoever's got instilled certainty in that moment, all of a sudden people look to that person as the leader. And that's what happened on the right side of the plane, where people stepped up and gave direction. And the other side of the equation, Patrick, which doesn't get enough credit, is check your ego at the door, where it's like, let other people who have a better skill set than you, let them do it.
Yeah.
And it's still with them. You do that, I'll figure out this. And obviously, all of a sudden, everything starts coming together. And that's how leadership really played into that day.
Well, and I'm preaching to the choir. I mean, that is a huge thing when you said, you got to check your ego. I see it in law enforcement. You've seen it in your experience, where if somebody's more experienced or somebody has, better training, you just need to step aside and let them take over.
Right. And it happened when I was in working with security with Tony, is there are some people on my team had better skill sets with communication.
Sure.
And whether it was a female or something else, I let them handle it.
Exactly.
You want to get the outcome, right? Focus on the mission, and that's what I learned, which applied that day likewise to myself, and I think other people.
Can you talk a little bit, David, about your book, Moments Matter?
Right.
And
yeah, in the way the Moments Matter came about, this is my second book. The first book, it was a compilation, which I basically participated in a chapter, wrote a chapter. This one, Moments Matter, came about because it was about 4 years ago. I went down the street. Everybody's got these neighbors where, and we had these two elderly ladies who lived down the street, and whenever they had their TV go out or their light go out, they'd call me and say, can you come down and fix my light? You know, or you just have that. You do it because you're a neighbor, right? You
sure,
do the good
sure.
stuff. So one day I was down there with them, and I fixed their TV, and they said, ask me if I want any cookies and milk. I said, of course, yeah, that's cool. I sat down on their couch. I was looking at these books that are on their coffee table, and all of a sudden I opened them up, and I noticed there's a picture of these concentration camps. And I kept looking at them. I'm like, where'd you get these? And they said, we were there. Our mom and dad died. And so they came up to me and showed me their inner sides of their arms. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, it blew me away.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you have to record this for posterity. Let me record this for history. And they said, no, we don't talk about it. So a couple years later, you know, this is after the plane crash, but before Moments Matter, my former assistant Vicky called me one day and said, you need to record this for your grandkids and great-grandkids
mm-hmm.
in your voice. So we recorded about 8 or 9 hours of this thing. All of a sudden we realized there's a lot of lessons and strategies that I used that day that can apply not only to, you know, crisis management,
mm-hmm.
but also handling entrepreneurship, whether
sure.
it's anticipation or risk assessment or leadership, teamwork, faith, whatever it is. And that's how the book Moment Standard came about. And then we're like, what are we going to call it? And all of a sudden we were just talking. It's like, you know, one thing I realized through this entire experience is all the moments in my life really did matter. When you know, you didn't think that time when you're a Boy Scout, you're going for the Order Era Award, and they tell you you have to get to cross a river, and you have to figure a way to do it, and you jump in with your backpack on and swim across with your backpack on. That one little thing back when you're 12 gave you the confidence to swim in the Hudson River with your clothes on when
yeah.
all hell's breaking loose.
And you speak to thousands and thousands of people, Dave. Why is it so hard for people to kind of reflect and take stock in those moments that have really changed their life? Why do so many people go back to the same behavior and not change course after something? I mean, this changed your life when you landed on the Hudson, and it really was a catalyst for great things in your life and to spread that message around. Why is it so hard for certain people?
People get in patterns. It's like I was in a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my new talk called Jolt. I think everybody needs that jolt in their life where, mm-hmm. you know, this was a slap across my face basically going, okay, get your act together. This is your second half of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with it? And I think people revert back to their own patterns because they have certainty in that. But
sure.
there comes a time in their life when you're going to need uncertainty in your life and a variety to make that change. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's going to come sometime. And I call it a personal plane crash, Patrick. Sometime, whether it's going to be fire, a flood, a health scare, whatever it may be, it's going to happen. And the question is, at that point in time, what are you going to do with it? You know,
exactly.
are you just going to let it go? Are you going to go backwards and poor, poor, pitiful me like a lot of people do and then get PTSD?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to say, okay, how can I add value and do something with it?
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it really is. But and I see it all the time, too, where people just fall back into that same funk. Where can people find your work, sir? Where can they find your book?
Well, I appreciate that. So if they go to my website, DaveSandersonSpeaks.com, they can only order the book. I'll personalize it. And I've taken out the filters, Patrick, where I used to have my assistant manage that. Now I manage it where that way if someone contacts me, I contact them directly back. So there's no filters. And they can do that, or they go to my Facebook page, Dave Sanderson Speaks, and they can order it there likewise. And that's where I leave sort of my what's going on. And LinkedIn is my David Sanderson. That's where I leave my business and entrepreneurial thoughts. And then Twitter, of course, are just basically those random thoughts. Dave Sanderson, too, is my Twitter handle. And you can get the book any one of those places. You can just ping and I'll send you back to the link where you can order it from me.
Well, David, you are truly an inspiration, sir. I want to thank you so much. I know you're a very busy man, and I thank you so much for coming on this show. And you're welcome back whenever you want. And I really do appreciate your time. Any final words of wisdom that you can give people out there?
No, I would just say the one thing that really changed in my life, and when you're faced with your personal plane crash, is value your time, prioritize your time where your family comes first, and that was my biggest change since the plane crash. Where I modeled my father, who was a great man, but he did what he thought he would need to do. He was World War II, you know, generation where you work hard, you make the money for the family. But you miss a lot of things because, you know, you're focused on that, like I was, where this basically told me is I need to refocus my time where I schedule my family's time first and then everything else around that. And that's, I would just tell people, you know, before it gets too late in your life, do that. Focus your time around your family and then schedule outward from there.
Exactly, because it, you know, it grounded you, for lack of a better, I mean, it did. I mean, it really made you think what's important in your life. Like,
most definitely.
So, David, I appreciate you, sir. I know you're busy. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
I'm honored to be here with you. Thank you, Patrick.
All right, buddy. You take care of yourself, all right?
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.